Steve Barnes, the Visa Geezer, how are you?
Hey, Phil, hello, hello, well, good afternoon. Yeah, I made it, just by the skin of my teeth.
What a pro.
Show must go on, as they say, you keep telling me.
Apparently so. I'll tell you what I want to speak about today, because we've only got a few minutes. You were talking about before about doing a talk tonight, and it's all about, well, you tell us.
Yeah, I have been invited by the good guys at The Hive in Wan Chai. The Hive is a co-working space for people who are running their own businesses but don't want to engage in the ultra expensive exercise of establishing your own offices.
Yeah.
So they've got a fantastic solution, and they've asked me to go and talk to their members and also speak generally to the public on getting a visa if you're a foreign national entrepreneur in Hong Kong. So I'm going to be talking about that.
Define. Let's start from the beginning. A foreign national entrepreneur.
Okay, if you're a foreigner, you come to Hong Kong, you don't have residence permissions here, and you want to establish or join in a business, you need to secure the Immigration Department's permission to do that.
Right.
And that dresses itself up in an investment visa application.
Right.
A business investment visa application. Because there are two ways to get residence status for Hong Kong on the basis that you make investments here. The first is to put $10 million into a certain Hong Kong...
So it doesn't matter who you are.
If well, within, with certain exceptions, if you're North Korean, for example, if you're Cuban or Albanian, but ostensibly, you can put $10 million into certain types of Hong Kong publicly listed stock shares, bonds, and the like, and get residency that way. Or you can invest in your own business or invest in somebody else's business. Right. And in that exercise, under the general employment policy, you can get a residence visa. So effectively, what it means is that if you haven't got $10 million, but you've got some business acumen, and you've got the wherewithal to give effect to a business plan, and you've got, you know, the kind of resources that you need to be successful when you start up a business anyway. If you're a foreigner, you want to come to Hong Kong and choose Hong Kong as your base of operations to do that, you stand a pretty good chance of getting a visa to be able to do so.
Isn't it a tiny bit crass, Steve, that putting this very broadly, you can buy your way in?
Yeah. That's true, but if you think about it, to be able to buy your way in, you've got to be of a certain sort of ilk and caliber, and this town thrives on money, lives on the mighty dollar, so if you've got the resources, why not?
What if you're a very successful professional gambler?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because actually you need to show that you've owned the $10 million in this instance, if you're going under that program, it's called the Capital Investment Entrance Scheme, for a minimum of 2 years immediately prior to making the application. So as long as you've owned it and you've won it and owned those resources for the 2 years, then effectively there'll be no inquiry as to your source of funds to participate under that $10 million program. But I have on the go right now two clients who were professional poker players, and when the US authorities changed the rules of being able to play poker online if you're a US citizen or if you're a US business in that respect.
Right.
A lot of them lost their opportunity to play. And the diaspora of international online poker players has sort of spread itself out now. And there are a number of them that are looking for a place to call home. And I've got two clients on my books at the moment who are wealthy, have done well in poker, they've got business acumen, and they're investing into Hong Kong because it'll give them a base to increase their return on their investment from the winnings in poker, because they'll deploy it in Hong Kong's economy accordingly.
Yeah, I'm sure it's all above board, but you know where I'm going with this one.
You just want to go
good old Hong Kong. Heart on the left, wallet on the right.
Well, you know, what's wrong with that?
You create jobs,
it's booming. I spend a lot of time in Australia, as you know, and the economy down there is just rubbish. It's tepid, it's awful, but you come here and there's a buzz in the air.
I think where it does get a bit serious is that if you're somebody who's got a very credible reason to want to come here, but you can't afford to do that, and it's just like, oh my gosh, if only I have the dosh.
But you can come and work for somebody else, and if you possess special skills, knowledge and experience of value to not readily available, and you can get a job offer.
Yeah.
Hong Kong will look at you from the human capital perspective, and if you tick all the boxes, you'll get a visa.
All right, let's carry on with your thing then. We're talking about the two schemes.
Yeah, so you've got the Capital Investment Entrance Scheme, which is a $10 million scheme, and you've got the Business Investment Visa under the General Employment Policy. The irony is that actually, as I say, if you've got something of a business track record and you have got a half-decent business plan that you think is is worthy of your time investing into.
Right.
For less than $1 million Hong Kong, you can persuade the immigration department to get the same sort of residence permissions ostensibly that you would acquire under the $10 million program. For all practical purposes, they are the same.
That thing about if you have skills and you always rattle off this line.
The provability test for employment visa. Special skills, knowledge and experience of value to and not readily available in Hong Kong.
Is it easy to get into the how long is a piece of string discussion on this particular issue?
No, because effectively what you're looking at is an assessment of your personal qualities and your career to date in the context of any particular job offer that you've had extended to in Hong Kong.
Doesn't make you better than a Hong Kong person, and that's what they're looking for. In other countries too.
The interesting thing there is how you define better.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
At the end of the day, it's what have you got that ostensibly is going to be of value to Hong Kong, and actually, the immigration department don't in the main expect you to advertise. If you're a company wanting to employ a foreigner, they don't expect you to advertise for a local person to do the job that you're about to offer to the foreigner. Of course, the policy criteria require the immigration department to look at ostensibly the ability of a local person to do that job. But, you know, once you get to a certain sort of managerial category and you get to a certain sort of level of income, and you've got a CV that shows you've got a good education and you've got sufficient experience at a managerial level for a sufficient period of time.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, the immigration department just accept at face value.
So it's the wording actually that could possibly be better, because let's face it, if you're somebody who's coming from another country at the behest of somebody else, they will have said, well, we really want this guy or lady because of X, Y, and Z. And what's happening there is you're saying it's now up to a bunch of guys in Immigration Tower to make this decision when I'm the specialist and I want him.
Well, that's right. And you hit the nail on the head there when you talked about it being the wording, because in the final analysis, the Immigration Department will decide their applications based on the paperwork that you put before them.
Yes.
So if you put papers before them that allow half a story to be told, then the argument goes that probably they'll only conclude for themselves 50% of what you really ought to have them be concluding to get the case over the line.
Yeah.
So ostensibly, unless you're an intercompany transferee moving from the same employer overseas to come and work in Hong Kong for them, you've got to, in part of your application, be ready to make an argument.
All right, we're talking about corporate stuff at the moment. I'm with Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa geezer. If you've got any questions at all, no matter how silly you think it is, you've got about 10 minutes to email us, morningbrew@rthk.hk. Is there any sort of type of job that comes up time and time again in this area?
Sponsored employment, no. Actually, it's every sort of every economic activity under the sun tends to sort of come across my desk in relation to work visas that are needing to be secured. So there isn't a specific category of character, if you will, of person that...
We'll narrow it down a bit more to the schemes you're talking about. I mean, I'm assuming, is there somebody with a particular skill in a certain area that you're seeing more of, perhaps, than accountants or whatever?
Well, certainly in the capital investment entrance scheme, interestingly enough, the vast majority, I think it's more than 80% now, of people who secure a capital investment entrance scheme visa are Chinese nationals resident on the mainland.
Right.
Now, there's a wrinkle to this that's quite interesting.
There's a few.
Because the program effectively is set up to preclude high net worth individual Chinese nationals who are resident on the mainland from applying directly to Hong Kong for a capital investment entrance scheme visa, which is the $10 million visa.
Because that would be a piece of cake for them.
That's right. And the way that the system is set up, effectively, if you are a Chinese national in those circumstances, if you can secure permanent residency in another country before you make your application to Hong Kong, the Immigration Department will entertain your application.
Right.
What that means is that there's an entire industry of consultants out there that are securing permanent residence status in West African countries for nominal investments on the part of high net worth individual Chinese.
That should be quite easy, because China's very cozy with Africa at the moment.
Such as Guinea-Bissau and the Gambia, even though the Gambia doesn't have diplomatic relations with China, they have diplomatic relations with Taiwan. However, the West African countries have been smart enough to realize that if they can avail the opportunity for rich Chinese people to secure a permanent residency, at some point conceptually they may wish to take up their residency in those countries and by virtue of them physically being there and doing what Chinese business people do invariably very well, it's going to contribute to their economy. So there are these two West African nations, specifically the Gambia and Guinea-Bissau, set up these programs. They're actually very welcome. And so now, if you're a Chinese national and you're rich enough, you can secure permanent residency in the core as well, in less than a month, for example, yeah, in Guinea-Bissau or in the Gambia. And then you can apply directly to Hong Kong for the Capital Investment Entrance Scheme program. And so 80% of all applicants under this program are now using that route, which is very interesting. It makes Hong Kong the Macau of China.
Well, the interesting thing here is you only have to open the newspapers every few weeks and read something about how Chinese money is being used to sponsor something in Africa, and there's a nice cozy relationship.
Yeah, it's great. It's actually really clever how the whole thing ties together.
And you're assuming it's all kosher, of course.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and kudos to the immigration department. They can see that Hong Kong's going to benefit by allowing high net worth individual successful Chinese people to come to Hong Kong and live here, and by allowing these permanent residency approvals from West African nations to achieve that we're able to fulfill, as I say, the role of Hong Kong being the Monaco of China.
Okay, you are technically, you are just being technically a visa guy here. You're fully aware of the social implications of all of this. Once again, it's all in the news all over the place. It's not the friendliest of vibes at the moment,
I get that. I mean, I see the sort of money that these people have, and I see what their business plans are, and I see them creating jobs, and I can see that it's just good.
Yeah. So you can't really involve yourself in the over here, overpaid, and over all that sort of stuff argument, can you?
I live my life through the
shooting property prices through the roof, apparently.
That's another issue again. I live my life through the prism of visa approvability.
Yeah, I know
and
you do.
I'm very sad
in
that respect.
I know you do. All right, then, so let's go for the one where people who aren't from the mainland of China, and they have, what is it, how many million?
10 million Hong Kong.
Has that proven to be quite successful?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's something like 1,200 cases. No, I think it's a bit big, but like 1,600 cases a year that are approved under that program. Whereas the business investment visa that doesn't cost anywhere near 10 million.
Yeah.
There's only between 250 and 400 approvals each year. But having said that, I know there are 2,000 to 3,000 applications each year, but there's only a very small percentage, 15% of them are still approved.
Is that because there's no guarantee, you know, that they really have the kind of wherewithal to contribute financially to this place? Like, if you've got a business idea, 50-50, it may work or it may not.
No, it's because the Immigration Department's website basically is set up to encourage everybody to make an application.
Okay.
And they don't lay out really what the criteria are for approval. So they encourage all comers, and with that they effectively cherry pick the good ones that they want to get approved.
Is a lot of their bureaucracy tailored towards mainlanders these days, just in your opinion?
It's a big part of what they do, obviously.
Sure.
But they've got certain programs and they staff certain divisions to manage those programs that deal with the Chinese nationals.
Right.
But yeah, it's certainly a healthy part of what they do, as you'd imagine.
I wonder if they've had many bites on that big artistic thing with the likes of Lang Lang, and, you know, there was like talent, supreme talent or whatever it was.
Well, each selection exercise, there's about 100 visas issued each time, and the selection exercise is between every 5 and 7 months.
Mm.
So I don't know exactly how many like really, really super slam dunk QMAS approvals are given out. Slam dunk is where you get maximum number of points because of what you've done, that's right, in the past. So I know there's some very high profile individual instances, but I did a case a few years ago where we effectively tried to secure a permanent identity card and by extension a HKCR passport for an American citizen who was going to be divesting herself of her American citizenship so that she could represent Hong Kong in the Olympics for downhill ski racing. In the end, she decided not to progress, but that was the strategy,
I remember that. Now, was that because it was all too much trouble?
Yeah, it was in the end. It was just too much. As a relatively young person, it was too hard for to persuade the Americans to let her U.S. citizenship go, so she gave up in the end. Because the U.S. Authorities effectively feel that when somebody's divesting themselves of the U.S. nationality, they're doing it for tax purposes. In her instance, it was completely different. She'd hardly ever lived in the U.S. because if her folks were from here.
Well, that's really interesting, and I wonder if they've changed their because, you know, a lot of people, for various reasons, we know some political mates who had to get rid of their American or British or whatever, or Dutch passports, It's nothing to do with financial gain.
I know. In the final analysis, I mean, the Americans will let you do it, but they don't let you do it easily because they just assume you've got something to hide for tax purposes.
Well, tell you, I've heard another story on this. Now, this could be a complete nonsense too, but if you're like a Brit or an American, maybe even an Aussie, I don't know, you're hurrah, I renounce my nationality. And somewhere down the line, somebody will say, and by the way, would you like it back? Once all the dust has settled.
That's certainly the case in Australia. I know you can conceptually renounce your nationality, and then you can apply to get it back again. But it does beg the question as to why you go through all that palaver in the first place just to get a HKCR passport.
Well, Hong Kong is very, very different, and I love the things that are slightly off the beaten track. This is one. As I say, people here have gotten rid of their country of origin nationalities. Yeah. For very honest reasons.
Yeah, and this is fair enough. Especially, for example, if you're from, say, a country like Pakistan or another, or India, even to a certain degree, where it's just really hard work to get travel visas to go anywhere. If you can get a HKCR passport by renouncing, say, your Indian or Pakistani nationality, becoming a Chinese citizen in the process, because you're a permanent resident in those circumstances, you can get a HKCR passport. Your HKCR passport is going to allow you access visa-free to more than 160 countries worthwhile. It's a great travel document.
That's another way of doing it, isn't it?
It's a really good travel document. And I know there's all the hoo-ha before the handback as to, you know, what was going to happen for travel document purposes to a Chinese permanent residents of Hong Kong. But we have a first-class travel document now. We should be justifiably proud of it.
I know people who carry one or two passports. One might be an Irish passport, because going into certain countries, well, like going into China, piece of cake.
Well, I have two. I have a British passport. I have an Australian passport because I'm an Australian citizen as well now, so I know the benefits of that.
If you wanted to go to Shenzhen right now, you could get a visa at the border.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd get the hoo-ha, I'd get the dance around.
That's right, exactly.
They owe us one still.
But let's not forget, Phil, if you've got a permanent identity card, that in itself is a travel document, because you can exit and enter Hong Kong on the strength of your travel document.
Yeah, but
you've got to go somewhere else. That's right. So I always say that, you know, the right of abode in Hong Kong is de facto citizenship, albeit without a passport, but that you do get a travel document, a minor travel document.
That is a very weird line, isn't it, Steve? This whole thing about, you know, when you apply for ID card and everything, you get the right to land. None of us know what that means. And then you get the full thing.
Well, that's right, yeah. There are a variety of different rights that accrue with the right of abode, and one of them is the ability to actually set foot on Hong Kong soil and not be removed by the government. That's what that means.
See, okay, that makes a bit more sense, but even when I had an ordinary ID card, I could do that.
But it was a privilege, not a right, and there's a fundamental difference between the two.
And that's where we're going to leave it. Where do we see you tonight doing your thing?
At The Hive in Wan Chai, but you can check out all the details, homepage of our website, hongkongvisageezer.com.
As always, a pleasure. An illicit pressure. Pleasure. Steve Barnes, thanks very much.